the Mix Zone podcast by Infront Lab. On this podcast, we speak with sports and innovation leaders from around the world about creating sport experiences fans truly deserve. For those who are joining us for the first time, we're the digital and tech branch of Infront Sports. At the lab, we put the fans first and use technology to improve their experiences by helping rights owners meet their fans at every touch point along their journeys. We work with all sports-related industries, from data to content, and everything in between. Welcome to another episode of The Mix Zone. I'm Marav Sevier, your host for today. And this episode is going to be all about OTT and streaming because, as you can see, that's been the discussion over the last couple weeks. But not only about streaming itself and how you can stream through your computer, but more specifically about what we can do via streaming apps. That means connecting your favorite streaming platforms to your phone, to your Apple TV, your Android, whatever it may be. So joining us for this conversation today are, first of all, Ran Meirman, VP of R&D at Applicaster, and Jan Umansky, the head of tech here at Infront Lab. Gentlemen, welcome to the Mix Zone.
Thank you.
Hi, glad to be here.
So before we start talking about streaming and OTT and full disclosure up front, some of the work that we've done together, us having a streaming OTT building platform and Applicaster, obviously building the apps, and Ran, you'll tell us a little bit more about it as we go along. But first, I'd like to hear more about yourself. So Ran, we'll start with you. You're right now visiting in Europe, based out of the United States. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So first, hi, nice to meet you in the podcast for the first time here. I'm, as you mentioned, I'm Ran, I'm the VP of R&D at Applicaster. I'm at Applicaster for the last 12, 13 years, doing different set of roles, engineering, now managing the tech and the engineering at the company. I think that throughout this period, I saw the transition or the shift of the OTT world, starting with linear was at the strength and now moving toward direct to consumer. So we've seen a lot of changes throughout new customers, same customers, and so on. So that's about me. I'm an engineer in my profession, but now I'm mainly managing the tech.
So you've seen a lot of these changes over the years, and changes that Jean and I actually previously talked about. Jean was a part of the Mix Zone before he joined us here at Infront Lab, but it's been a while. So Jean, take it away about yourself.
Yeah, a different introduction, a new title. So now I'm the head of technology at the lab, which I wasn't before. Formerly the CEO of Twisted Design, a company that got acquired by the lab about a year ago. Before that, I'm a designer by education, Ron. I don't know if you knew that.
Surprise, yeah.
You actually know more of his personality. It's not that much of a surprise. He's got that designer personality.
Okay. I made a switch to tech.
Okay.
And I have been in the broadcasting industry for almost 2 decades. My trajectory was interesting because I started in like traditional broadcasting, all the linear, you know, graphics for news, for sports, a lot of like live events production, and then move to the streaming space, the OTT and the everything digital, ditching hardware, leaving hardware behind, enjoying the cloud and a tiny laptop, basically. Yeah. Today I'm running the tech at the lab, which is Infront Tech Division, where we heavily focused on OTT, of course, and us working in the past together.
So working the past together, working currently together, also having this partnership that I mentioned earlier, we'll touch a little bit upon that partnership. But Ran, can you share more a bit about what is it that Applicaster does? Because Applicaster also, you work outside of just the sports niche. I want to make sure that our listeners are aware of that. And what it is that you do on a day-to-day?
Yeah, so at Applicaster, we basically provide a platform to build, design and manage a direct-to-consumer OTT apps, as it's called today, but basically a media or extensive media apps platform. So our customer varies. We have a lot of sports related, but as you mentioned, we also have a lot of entertainment or traditional what was before traditional broadcasters that wants to build an experience of direct to consumer. In this industry, and specifically in sports, probably we're going to talk about it later, the bespoke experience that the broadcaster or the sports or the sports league federation and so on wants to create is important, right? They want to build this overly engaged way to communicate with their consumers or fans, if we're talking about sports. What our platforms allows is to build the bespoke apps, direct-to-consumer apps without development, right? So we have a tool that allows you to design, to build your unique user experience, to build different experience based on different type of content and so on. And we build it across multiple platforms. So this is kind of covering the what we offer in terms of our uniqueness, right? So you can actually build something bespoke that looks highly customizable, but without the need of a full engineering team or a lot of developers to build it. And our platforms allows you to connect to any type of tech stack in the backend that you hold. So I think that this is the value proposition of what we offer mainly.
And in part of that tech stack, as you mentioned, it's able to connect to one of those is obviously Stream Engine on our side, part of Infant Labs Engine's 365 product suite, which, as you mentioned, no code necessary, a little bit less of knowledge of that tech background to allow sports organizations to build their own OTT platform on computers, PCs, Macs, whatever it may be, for viewers to watch, which is how we also work with AppliCaster. And Jean, you know, the technology comes for you, so I'll let you to explain a little bit more about what it is that Stream Engine does before we get into why it's important to begin with. Obviously, you both saw, I myself also saw coming from the broadcasting industry, what it was like 10 years ago and watched this development and seeing how important it's becoming. A lot of talk about it today. But first, John, like we mentioned, a little bit about Stream Engine, how it works and what it does for sports organizations.
Sure. So Stream Engine essentially solves the problem of enterprise wide level OTT challenge. Okay, so let's talk about this challenge for a second. Basically, when we're looking at the market in terms of streaming, the easiest way, without going into, you know, very detailed market breakdown, what we can see is, on one end, we have all the social media video solutions that would be YouTube's and TikToks and the rest of the social media. In that model, the idea is really simple, right? Like, you as the contributor of content share your content online, and then you get all the services for free, but in exchange, the platform monetizes you and your content through ads or any other various models. Okay, so that is model number one. And then the other model, all the way on the other end of this scale, would be the Netflixes of the world, HBO Max, the Disney Plus, the FIFA Plus, ESPN, and so on, right?
All the competitors to sports also.
Sure, but they always use dedicated development teams. Sometimes it's a success. Sometimes it's not that much of a success. We will not go into categorizing who had the success or not. But but basically, one thing is very true. Like, for example, time to market, the maintenance of the code, going forward with technology updates and robustness of the system, the scalability. Everyone, all the big players trying to solve this challenge again and again and again, each on their own. Sometimes do it better, sometimes some of them less, but basically those are just the beginning of the challenges of developing your own OTT platform. Stream Engine lands in between. The idea is that we still want to give you the ability to build your own platform. And when I say your own, it means you keep your brand. It's your look and feel. It's your way to monetize. It's your data, right? But at the same, it's still not coding. Okay, it is still low code platform. So if you want to build your own enterprise OTT and you don't want to hire a dev team or don't or can't hire a dev team. Stream Engine basically comes and solves this issue. Own your content, own your monetization, but don't invest too much time in, or money actually, custom development.
Or money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that these days when, so looking back, let's say, I don't know, 10 years ago, 7 years ago, something like that, the distribution for direct to consumer was mobile only. But now you want to deliver your content everywhere. Everywhere means you need to have multiple platforms. So you want to be on Roku and Amazon Fire in the US. You want to be on Apple TV because you need to be on Apple devices. You want to be on LG and Samsung because this is the vast majority of devices that are out there. It becomes very expensive to own your own tech in terms of in-house development and so on. So I think that between Stream Engine and Applicaster, you can build a solution that is helping you get there fast, time to market, without the need to invest that amount of money. And engineers are very expensive these days. So it's tough.
Ron, you mentioned just a couple of the devices that fans or viewers would listen on. And, you know, this is just taking into account also the fact that depending on where you are globally, this is going to change. So obviously in the United States, maybe iOS is the more, it's the bigger player. So everyone wants to hear and watch on their phones or on their Apple TV. And as you mentioned, Roku. But if you go to Europe or Asia, potentially it's Google phones and Androids and Xiaomi that are the prominent types of phones or devices, if we're talking about tablets, etc. So it also changes based on where you are. And that's a big thing for sports organizations, especially when we talk about it from the perspective of globalization of sports. It's no longer the fact that if you play in a certain country, that's where your fans are and that's where your crowd is and that's who you're speaking to. Everything has become so globalized. And I think we also see that more and more so in terms of, you know, Leo Messi going to Miami and now turning the MLS into more of a global sports football league rather than just something that was very US and very, you know, speaking to American audiences. And that's also why there is a need to not only have these OTTs, but be able to then stream that content to every single device, as you mentioned.
Yes, indeed. I think that in 2024, it's clear that the sports organization, sports team, and so on, all the ones that want to bring the content, they need to have a direct-to-consumer strategy. Like, it's very clear. The options for the end users are so wide, and you want to be able to engage your fans with the experience that you want to build for them. So, you know, there are, if I'm comparing it to entertainment, think about it 1 second. There are kind of, let's say, two types of thing. One is that you want to buy something because you want to see some specific content. And another type of purchase is emotional. Okay. An emotional purchase usually goes with kids because you want to buy something for your kids. So if you're talking about entertainment for your kids, and the second one or the first, depends on the person, is you want to follow your team. It's emotional. It's not something that you like. I mean, you grow up with it. If you are a sports fan, you want to be there and you want to be engaged and you want to consume as much as possible. And you want to be so basically it's an emotional purchase, right? Because you want it. It's not you need it necessarily. But
I think
you want
for
it.
Some people, they need it. It's not only a want. When you talk about sports,
it's true. It's true.
You need that. You need to be connected every single moment to your favorite sports teams, to your athletes, whatever it may be.
Exactly. And then it becomes to the point that the brands or the teams or their federations, leagues, and so on, they need to provide some uniqueness to their users to keep them engaged. And this is where they need to build a direct-to-consumer strategy. They cannot rely only, like Jean mentioned before, the social networks. It sounds cheap, right? Because you don't need to do a lot. The platform is there. It's very robust, very strong. But you actually pay a lot. You lose a lot of the things that you can do with your own content, right? So I think that it's a major thing that brands need to think about these days. How they solve this. How they break this connection of users from the social network to their own brand and build their own fan base that is stronger, understanding their fans and so on. rather than just going to a platform that is very wide, generic, and provides you always the same type of experience.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. If you think about it, a few years ago, there are massive brands that never had any kind of technological experience, right? Because historically, everybody was selling rights. So as a brand, right, selling my right means that that's the easy way, right? I sold my rights, then somebody else gonna deal with the distribution challenges, the technical challenges of broadcasting it, send like locking it, geo-blocking it, and so on. Now we see more and more cases in which the brand itself is becoming the direct-to-consumer provider. And it's very interesting because this no-code approach is becoming not, oh, it's nice to have. It's mandatory in a sense, because you cannot compare a brand that historically was selling their rights to a broadcaster that is fundamentally technological, right? Decades of technology, engineers, they know how to do it. Now suddenly those tools goes to people who don't need to code, and they are doing it.
And how many sports clubs or organizations do you know that have engineers on the payroll? Maybe today a little bit more than you would have in the past, but that's still not something that's prominent.
Minimal, of course.
Yeah, very minimal. I think that the evolution of these brands was that they so when social went out, they understood they need to build a digital, like let's call it a digital team, right? To start doing something and maybe monetize, maybe build a fan engagement, but it was not clear that they can monetize on top of it. So they started working with the social. They were probably dragged into the get-gos for social, YouTube, right? Easy platform, great platform. You could just put the content, it's there, it reaches
And it's
infinity.
already on every single
And then
device.
the exactly. So the redistribution is great. But then they realized that there are caveats, right? Using YouTube. So then they started understanding they need to be direct to consumer. But how to build a technical team within an organization, it's a shift of culture. It's not something that you can just do in one day for a sports club that is all about the sport and marketing, probably, right? And sales and marketing. It's not a shift that you can do easily. I think that the platforms that provide this, I mean, the barrier is much lower, right? So now you can actually build your direct to consumer quite easily without the need. You have the content, you then need to decide, like John mentioned, I want to sell my rights or I want to monetize my rights in my direct to consumer experience with my customers. And I think it really depends on the brand what will go better, right? I think there is a mixture between the two, and it's an applicator and then in front. We see a lot of different approaches that brands took throughout the
And I
years.
think I want to follow up on two things that you said, Ilan, because first of all, we're talking about rights in terms of direct to consumer. And I think a lot of sports organizations, what they forget is you don't necessarily have to have rights in order to build a direct to consumer video-based platform for your fans. There's a ton of content that sports organizations can put out there that has nothing to do with the live games, because as we're seeing with younger generations, with this constant connectability to sports from fans, is that everyone wants more. There's a game, what, once a week, twice a week. If we're talking about NBA, NHL, maybe it's 3 times a week in a good week. But in between, there's those 24, 48, 72 hours where fans still want content. They still want to engage with their favorite players, with their teams. And there's a ton of content that clubs can create on their own and share via direct-to-consumer platforms that may have not been done previously, that isn't probably being shown for broadcasters. It's completely unique to them. And it's another way for them to engage with fans, create better experiences, monetize if they decide they want to monetize it, or open it up for their fans for free just to be able to have another touch point to fans to bring them into their ecosystems.
I completely agree. Look, the way we look at it is we say we divide it kind of to three. You have generally three types of fans. You have the casual fan. Okay, I want to get notified. I want to understand what's going on. I don't really care now watching 90 minutes of football or whatever, 3 hours
But
of
I'll
NBA or
scroll through
whatever it
Twitter or
is.
X or whatever it may be in
Exactly. I scroll, I see social, I get notification, I want to know when the goal was scored or where, I don't know, what the last score of volleyball. One type of fan. The second one is the more enthusiastic. Okay, now I'm a fan of football, I'm a fan of basketball or baseball or whatever. I want to watch. So give me the content. I want to see live content. I probably want to see highlights if you cannot provide me the content and so on. And there is the diehard fan, which means, or the fanatic, let's call it. So it means I want to be engaged all the time. This is, and I think generally with teams more because you are attached to the team brand. So I'm a, I don't know, a Liverpool football club or Barcelona football club fan. I want to know everything. And then it provides a lot of opportunities, like you mentioned, for this kind of fans, not only to provide the live and so on, because I want to know how, I don't know, LeBron. So this morning I opened, I categorized myself as a diehard fan on multiple sports. So I opened the app, one app in the morning, and I saw how the NBA, sorry, the
The
US
new dream
team,
team.
for the dream team for the Olympics, how they enter the bus and how they go and how they wear the thing. And this is where this content that is not related to rights, right? You have this content, you're the brand, so you just take a short clip of the players going up and you start distributing it. And all these idea of short clips, very fast scrolling that the TikTok and Reels and so on provided us, is another opportunity of not owning the rights, but yes, distributing your content that people will pay for. So if you are a diehard fan, you will pay for it. You want to see what, I don't know, LeBron James ate for breakfast, or what Tom Brady did, or I don't know, Mahomes did for his, I don't know, sitting doing homework with his kids.
We've got a very
So there are a lot of
American
opportunities.
sports hero theme going on there. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Look, I mean, I think that also that one of the challenges that are being addressed today and actually solved is also the acquisition of content, right? It goes hand in hand because now there is a way to acquire more content faster and automatically with all the automated cameras, AI-driven content, and so on. So I think there was a period in time where a lot of brands stepped into a gray area where there was like, oh, so we sold the rights, but highlights, I think we can do that. Oh, but at the interview on the court side, maybe we can do that. And there was, I know for a fact that there was a few, you know, disagreements between broadcasters or right owners and the right and the brands themselves because it really got into a gray area. Nobody was kind of clear on, is this happening? Could we use those rights? But you don't use those rights, so why do you block me and so on? Today, it's way clearer because it's very clear to everyone that the acquisition volume went way higher than it was before, right? Again, you don't bring an obby van or a truck and a whole crew just to shoot every single training session, but with automated cameras, this becomes very easy, very possible. There is no overhead. And this volume of content, Merav, provides what you exactly said, those 72-hour gap of added value, it needs to come from somewhere. And the faster you can create content, then the more you can have and distribute.
And of course, we talked about social media before, and there's still some place for social media within this entire ecosystem of how to get fans to your owned and operated platforms and to your streaming, to your applications, whatever it may be. You know, you can hook them with that 20 seconds of, if we're using the LeBron making his breakfast, LeBron's cooking, but what did he eat? Hook them into it from social media to bring them onto your streaming platform and your app to watch it. Because at
Absolutely.
the end of the day, it's also a lot about personalization and what fans may want to see. And Jean, you may want to, you know, tune in to watch what they're eating for breakfast. And Ran wants to watch their practices or their shoot around before games. And I have a completely different set of wish lists in terms of what I want to see as a fan. So we're talking about also personalizing experiences. There's a lot of ways for these technologies to be used to then bring them onto streaming platforms, bring them into the apps in order to actually have these experiences that connect them to their teams. I mean, we're talking about emails and push notifications and so many different ways to engage these fans, you know, maybe they're watching LeBron step off the bus while they're stepping onto the bus on their phone, on with their phone in their hands.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the volume, the sheer volume on its own is massive. We are now at a point where we need to filter out, right? Before we're talking about like, how do we acquire all this information and all these visuals? Now we're kind of dialing it back down, or what do we do with this, with all this content? But like you said, there is still a very like fundamental role that social media is playing. And look, I think it's pretty clear that there is also a shift from the fans' perspective, from moving from like, okay, I'm a diehard fan of a team, to moving to I'm a fan of a person that represents the team. Mm-hmm. And this is due to social media alone, right? Like, because social media is very personal. You are a person on social media. You share your opinions. People follow you. You represent the team. People follow your team. So this is, maybe we can talk about the ski from last year, where we actually saw this, and Marab, you were leading this effort with Michaela Schifrin, right? Like, it was a very personalized message on social media that drive the audiences into the OTT experience where her races are being streamed in the United States. So this is, I think, a perfect example of like the ecosystem and how it works.
Yeah, I think that the successful brands that create this fan engagement are the one that utilizes everything that they have in hands, right? So on social media, everybody's there, mm-hmm. right? On Instagram, on TikTok, whatever. So that's for sure should be your starting point. But then there's also importance these in 2024 to monetize this fan engagement, right? So for that, you want to drag your users and build this relationship with your users where they can pay, whether it's via advertisement or it's a subscription, different models that you can do. But for that, you need to give them value. And that's what, like John mentioned, you need to filter a lot of what you do. And what we see a lot these days, it's not only about content, but it's type of content. And you can see it specifically when you have these big tournaments like the Euro, Copa America, Olympics, and so on. There are a lot of fan engagement tools that people are helping bringing people to your property, which is
your property, to your sponsor's property, whoever it may be.
Exactly. And then based on that, you gain a lot of traction that helps you keep the audience base because you provide them a lot of value. If we're talking about fantasy leagues or deep stats and so on, on top of the let's call it video mm-hmm. content or traditional content that exists in these platforms. I think it's the ones that will succeed the most are the ones that's going to nail this balance between how they build this fan engagement. So yes, push notification, but maybe not so much. Let's call it indirect communications between fans and your club with your team and so on. And how to ride on this success by providing the additional content, video content on top of that. That might sound less interesting, but for the diehard fan, for sure, it's very interesting.
And of course, this also differs based on where your fans are, how old they are, and you may have to, cater to each one of them in different ways, because fan bases aren't all males 35 to 55 in the UK. There's so many different types of demographics, and you're gonna communicate with each one of them in such a different way. And in that regard, Ran, I'm curious, because you work obviously with organizations who are outside of sports, that were within the entertainment industry at large. What have you seen some of your clients in the entertainment industry doing that you think maybe can also be translated to sports that we haven't seen sports organizations do just yet?
Yeah. So I'm going back to my cliche that the in 2024, teams, clubs, federation, they have to have the direct-to-consumer approach, which the entertainment industry understood, right? All this cord-cutting and so, right, mm-hmm. approach, how easy it is to be on all the devices. You don't need to have major deals with some, major cable operators or whatever it is these days, right? So that's one trend that it's clear that it's happening. It is happening. So the sport, the clubs, and so on, they need to have this. They need to have direct communication with their customer, and that's the first trend that they should learn from the entertainment field. I think that in terms of what John mentioned about content curation and about this automation and personalization, right? All these fancy words, but the idea to build a tailor-made experience for different users. Going back to what I mentioned, am I the app or this owned and operated platform should address these three types of fans? Because, like you said, it's not everybody. A 35-year-old diehard fan. You have also fans that just want to get notified, and you have fans that only want to watch the live or the highlights, right? They wake up in the morning, they want to drink the coffee, and they want to see the last goals, you know, the handball in Sweden. So I think that one thing that they should also be pulling from the knowledge that the entertainment field built is this personalized approach of how I know to serve each one of these, whether it's AI that learns the behavior, whether it's a very, I think it's critical to mention a very fundamental onboarding experience so that the user will let you know what they like. So if I'm going to this combo apps that has a lot of different type of sports, I'm not necessarily interested in basketball. Maybe I only want to follow handball, right? Let me choose. Let me tell it to you, or learn it yourself based on my usage. But then it's harder because it takes time till the algorithm learns what you like. So, I mean, so the two important things is, of course, first have your property. Then once you have the property, start building this tailor-made experience for each one of the type of fan that you have.
Jean, over the years, also, you've been following it from the broadcaster perspective into the tech side of it, into building everything out and looking forward. What are we looking at in terms of trends now? If we're looking at this OTT streaming and app, mix, because as we're saying, they go hand in hand, because nowadays no one wants to just watch on their computer. They're not walking through the park with their computer, they're walking through the park with their phone. And maybe that's when there's a game that's starting in Europe, but you're based in New York that you really want to watch, so you have to watch it somehow. What are the trends that you're following now, and not also to you, that are helping you kind of base roadmaps that you're looking at in terms of technologies, and also to continue to improve these fan experiences, to build that brand loyalty? Because obviously, we're talking also a lot about white labeling apps. That way, if you're FC Barcelona, or if you're the NBA, or if you're Swedish Handball League that Ron mentioned, everything is in your brand. It speaks to your fans, and make sure that when they land on, if it's online on a web browser, on the URL, or if they open the app, everything is brings in that sort of comfort. I don't know about you guys, but my teams bring me comfort. I see those logos, I see the colors, and it's a feel good. So making sure you got that brand loyalty. So what are the trends that you're watching, to help push this forward?
Well, so really, there is a few. First of all, I think everybody here and most of our listeners already know, right? Mobile dominates the market in terms of consumption of content. Even our web version sees 60% to 40% in loading on mobile web, right? So like, there is a lot of focus on the website to be mobile first, which basically speeds up everything, right? So, and this brings me to the next point, which is the responsiveness and the agility of the platform in general, right? People have no patience. So slow loading times, buffering times, everything in that regard is basically contributing to micro churn. That's one. That's another one. That's another one, because I have options as a fan, right? Not everything is exclusive. So you are not competing only in terms of, oh, I have the rights to stream something. Also, I need to provide the best experience to do that. And that goes back to the quality of the content in terms of video compression, distribution, loading times, and so on. People are very sensitive about this stuff, and it's understood why, because many platforms will provide with a very great experience in terms of in terms of loading content, and so on. The third thing that I think is maybe even the most important one is the monetization options. Okay, so it is a given, right? We know that we will probably, with a certain degree of error, of course, we know that we will convert the diehard fan, okay? Because mm-hmm. they are looking to get this content. But this is the smaller percentage of the fans, okay? The long tail of fans are more casual fans. They watch from time to time. They may not be interested in the entire season, but they want to watch the championship, the finals, or semifinals and all, right? And that translates to the way that we monetize our viewers. It is no longer enough to say, hey, you're going to have a pay-per-view, like most of the boxing events, right? Because they're happening once in a while, or you will have a subscription, which is more for events that are running on a constant basis, like a season, for example, right? But what about all the rest that are saying, hey, I want to watch only the finals, right? Or I need payment options to accommodate for the way I want to pay, not pay at once. So all the monetization options in terms of the models that we're building, we see that there is a huge difference when we can accommodate to more needs of the potential fans, okay? Because not only, not everyone are going to go to an annual subscription or into pay-per-view and purchase different games. So this, the introduction of Klarna, for example, to allow payments in installments, apparently a big deal for people who wants to not dump the entire amount at once, but split it. So yeah, monetization options are really, really great. And what was interesting is that we even saw interest in rentals in sports, which is normally dominated the, you know, the entertainment market, but even that has an interest these days.
I think you touched an important point. Think about, let's say that I have a UEFA or FIFA app. It will be very hard to keep the, like John mentioned, the long tail that after the tournament will keep on being your user, right? So what we see different trends for apps that are not very creative, or for brands that are not very creative or not, or let's say not succeeding that much, is that people are purchasing monthly, for example, for the time of a tournament or for the playoffs, or I don't know, league pass for the playoff time or whatever, and then they churn and they come back next year and so on. So I think one of the major efforts of these brands is how they build this fan engagement in between the seasons, right? Because you don't want to have churn, and you don't want to have these only fans that are coming on specific.
And you don't want to have to constantly try and bring them back, whether it's through organic or paid marketing, whatever it may be. You're constantly fighting to bring back the same fan over and over again.
Right. So I think that there are ways to do this churn prevention, right, by building with like smarter approaches towards that, maybe towards the event you ask for a specific price, but then it's not equal. Every, like, the monthly payments are not equal, right? So you once the event is done, you're maybe paying less. Yeah. It's much better than to lose the customers completely, right? Yeah. Exactly. So on season and off season. I think that one of the major thing that is different from entertainment, that sports is seasonal, right? You always have three phases, maybe more because sometimes you have playoffs and so on, but you have pre, during, and post-season, right? And each one of these time frames should have different experience, in my opinion, within your property. So how you engage your user pre-season to be kept throughout the season and not only wait for the playoffs, championship, or specific events and so on. And in the postseason, I think that you need to provide quality content that doesn't exist elsewhere. And this is another way for you to keep your engagement.
And that brings us back to the conversation that we had about the fact that you don't need rights in order to have a direct-to-consumer platform that engages with your fans. And perhaps, yes, during the off-season, you're going to engage more with fans who are those die-hard fans because they want to watch everything and anything. And you may lose some of the more casual fans. But as John said, you come in with these different opportunities for monetization, maybe change things around, and then you're able to hold on to everyone for all year long. And that's really what we want to do, especially, you know, there are some sports where, unfortunately, the off season is just as long as the season itself. So then you really have to struggle during those 6 months to try and figure out what to do to keep your fans engaged and entertained.
Yeah, I think that there is mathematically a way. And of course, it's unique per brand, unique per sport, unique per everything. But basically, you can see. So we're talking about off-season churn versus the non-converted pipeline, right? And the question becomes, and again, it really depends if the brand has the content, right, to keep the off-season. So everyone could focus on what is better for them. So for example, do I focus on retaining my annual subscribers, meaning I don't want to lose them during the off-season, or do I double down on my conversion options to make sure I get more subscribers during the on-season? Of course, it's not either or. It could be both, for example. But yeah, in the end, even in the on-season, right, giving those different options to onboard the users for a specific period of time or with some other like preferable payment conditions allows us to basically convert previously potentially unconverted users, right? And yeah, it's true that there will be some churn in the off seasons, but again, that can be, like Ron said, that can be addressed with unique content, and really depends what is the length of that off season and how much content you need to produce.
Exactly, but think about it. Let's say that you are a team, okay, and you have off season. You have a lot of activities that are happening, right? So for the fans, the season is shorter, but for the players or for the teams, the season is longer, right? So even within the postseason, so let's say the connection between the post and the preseason of the next one, you can shrink it and give a lot of value to your users by saying, okay, maybe now I'm not providing the extra live content additions that provides a lot of value for my fans, but maybe for the other one, now I can broadcast the training. I can broadcast, some out of the field engagement that players have because their season starts earlier. So there are a lot of ways to extend this. And I agree that it cannot be mutually excluded. You need to work on building a lot of customers, you know, that's a given. You need to build a lot to bring your customer to the during season, but you want to keep it because to bring them back after sometimes become harder. You don't know what will be the situation of the specific consumer and so on. Yeah. What's going to happen? Will he come back or not?
Absolutely.
And so on.
The speed at which you can, we were talking about the trends, right? So I think one of the things that, and again, this is kind of new, right? And if you think about it again, it was the same when brands were selling rights. You have the broadcaster owns all these rights. Okay. So during the season, there is a live feed coming from the brand. Those are the games. And then the off season, it's on the broadcaster. They own the rights. They can choose to do it. They have the tools. They have the technical knowledge and everything else. Now, it's what we said before, right? These all automated production tools sometimes allow the brands to create the off-season content easier. At the same time, by the way, the different monetization models, and again, I know it's not for everyone, but in our case, right, it's just another setting, right? So the ease of creating those monetization options, right, it costs you nothing, right? Like you can come and say, hey, I want to set up a new paywall with only the championship access and set it as a pass, and it's done, right? You really don't lose anything or risk anything. You just gave another options for your viewers and you convert them. You convert some of them. And you can really see the difference. Why? Because it's really a one-to-one question. How many people purchase a specific pass?
Yeah, I think that one additional thing that these platforms allow is the fact that you can experiment, right? So if you think about you need to operate your own platform. If you need to operate everything that you need to do, that you want to change, you need to code, right? Now you can say, okay, let's try. Like John mentioned, let's try, I don't know, 3 months pass, right? Let's try 1 week pass. Let's see what we get there. Let's try different experience. Maybe let's build a monetization flow that allows you, I don't know, to also add an option for ad-based. Maybe put some ads inside, mix and match all these. You don't need to work much to do that. It's a decision that the business can take by, you know, toggling some check boxes and so on and try. And it could work. Sometimes it wouldn't work. Sometimes it won't be consistent. But at least you can try and experiment and see what works for you. One thing will work for one brand and won't work for another one. It really depends on the type of sports, if it's a team, if it's a, you know, if it's a club, if it's a league, and so on. So it really depends on the content that you have. But you should experiment. I think it's
pretty. And these are experiments that you can't necessarily do when, you know, you don't have rights for anything or you don't have content that's exclusively yours. Again, this comes back to the discussion. The broadcaster may have the rights, but you can still test these things out with direct to consumer, with content that's exclusively yours, and also gives you more of that insight into your fans that you never had before. So now that you're doing these experiments, every type of experiment that you do, you learn a little bit more about fans, and maybe it's about a specific group within that fan base. But every time you get a little bit more insight, a little bit more data about your fans that helps you make better decisions, smarter decisions going forward.
When you sell the rights or distribute the content outside of your own property, it's very hard to get the analytics. You don't really know. You need to trust what they provide. Sometimes they provide and sometimes they don't, because they don't have the different platform where you distribute. When you own it, you know your fans and you know the analytics that you get, and you can take smarter decisions following, going to the brands that you want to distribute and sell the rights to, by telling them, look, this is the amount of users that I have. This is the monthly or annual, whatever consumption that I have. Now my brand worth more than me coming without having this information, right? So imagine this emerging type of brands, not necessarily the well-established, teams in the Premier. NFL. When you're building your brand, you don't really know what will be your fan engagement and so on. And by you can lose a lot by just selling it without getting this information. And you can leverage a lot by having your own analytics and then coming to this brand and telling them, look, I know what I'm worth, so I think you should take it. And so
you, when you come backed up with numbers, right?
Exactly, with data.
It is way, way better. Because that was the beginning, by the way, right? Like years ago, when OTT just became a buzzword, that was the opposite, right? Many people wanted to have OTT just because everybody else have OTT, okay? And then they started seeing the bills and they're like, okay, how do we pay for it? So that's, I kind of use this story in many discussions, that there was the beginning, but then, like you say, Ron, the measurement and the visibility into the consumption of the content on the platform, or not even consumption, but the engagement of the individual user with the platform to see what they like, what they don't like, personalization, what do they watch. It actually starts to shift the numbers in a positive direction, because now you measure, right? And you basically just, you do this recurring loop, right? I measure, I iterate, and I do it again and again and again until I'm starting to see positive numbers, because the majority of my viewers start to convert due to whatever reason it may be, financial, technical, quality, and so on.
Jean-Ran, I have no doubt we can continue talking about this for hours. It seems as if these last 50 minutes have gone by faster than we can possibly imagine. I think we're all maybe in shock that it's been nearly an hour of this conversation.
Wow.
But if anybody does want to continue talking to either one of you, whether it's about streaming itself, building apps, and so forth, everyone can find you on LinkedIn. We'll also have your names in the show notes, links to your LinkedIn so they can find you. And appreciate having both of you on. It's been a great discussion.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
you very
Pleasure
much.
being here.
Pleasure being here. I just want to say one last thing. I think it's important to like to cover. I think that brands these days should understand that they need to work on three, let's call it three pillars. Okay, they need to work on their fan engagement. They need to extend their distribution. Doesn't matter where. So this own and operated platform help with that, and they need to increase revenue. Like Jean mentioned, it's not only about having a marketing tool, it's about also making money at the end of the day. So,
and it's not something that we like to, you know, say to our fans on a daily basis that we're looking to make money, but everyone knows if there's no money, there's no
exactly story. Exactly. Correct. Thank you very much.
Well, on
a
that
pleasure.
Note, thank you for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
Take care.
Have a great day.
That wraps up this episode of The Mix Zone by Infront Lab. I'm Marav Sevier. You can find me and Infront Lab on LinkedIn. Don't hesitate to reach out and chat with our team about sports tech solutions or just last night's game. Enjoyed the episode? Let us know your thoughts on the podcast, and don't forget to rate us. We'll see you next time.